I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces say they have recaptured 41 positions held by Islamic State militants as they seek to clear the last enclave the militant group controls in eastern Syria. Mustafa Bali, an SDF spokesman, tweeted Sunday that SDF forces had destroyed fortifications in the village of Aguz, but that heavy fighting continued. He said that SDF advanced on northern and western axes into Baghouz and captured 41 positions. SDF, backed by U.S.-led coalition airstrikes, is fighting IS in a four-square-kilometer area that includes Baghouz, and it's near the Iraqi border. More than 23,000 Syrian civilians and foreign nationals fled eastern Syria this past week as the SDF, which includes Kurdish YPG militia fighters, prepared to move in. Another government shutdown could occur if congressional negotiators do not reach an agreement by Friday that U.S. President Trump agrees to. While funding for Mr. Trump's proposed border wall has been at issue, negotiators say that his opponents appeared ready to agree to some border barrier funding, perhaps as much as $2 billion, along with provisions for heightened controls at ports of entry to thwart drug smuggling and increased use of drones and other technology. Still on Fox News Sunday, acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney says the president is resolute about building a wall on the southern border, even if they don't fund it.
We'll take as much money as you can give us, and then we'll go off and find the money someplace else legally in order to secure that southern barrier. But this is going to get built with or without Congress. Okay.
Lawmakers have often said since the shutdown ended that a second closure would be prevented, but Mr. Trump has refused to rule it out if he does not like the border security agreement that's presented to him. He signaled that he could declare a national emergency and build the wall without congressional approval. Democrats have said that they will file a lawsuit if he does. This is VOA News. Venezuelan interim president Juan Guaido says leaders may be committing genocide by blocking food deliveries. Shipments of U.S. food, medicine, and humanitarian aid are on the Colombian side, with a tanker and two large trucks sitting in the middle of the bridge. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has ordered the soldiers to prevent the aid from crossing the border. Maduro has said the U.S. help is part of a plot to overthrow his government and said Venezuela does not need it. But a Venezuelan doctor who was part of a protest Sunday accused Maduro of sinking Venezuelan medicine to a medieval level. Yeah, Maduro appeared on state television showing off anti-aircraft systems and other weapons he says will make Venezuelan cities impregnable. South Korea and the U.S. signed an agreement Sunday that increases the amount the South will pay for having U.S. troops there. It will pay about $890 million under the one-year agreement. That's about $60 million more than last year. Kang Kyung-hwa is South Korea's Minister of Foreign Affairs.
The response so far has been quite positive. Of course, there are some points of criticism as well, and we will have to deal with them. But I think at this point, we were able to close the gap on the total amount, the number.
The agreement must still be approved by South Korea's parliament, which is expected to happen in April. Turkey says that China should close facilities it calls concentration camps for reported 1 million ethnic Uyghurs. Uyghurs, declaring them a great shame for humanity. A Turkish foreign ministry spokesman said in a statement Saturday that it's no longer a secret that more than 1 million Uyghur Turks incurring arbitrary arrest are subjected to torture and political brainwashing and internment camps and prisons. The Turkish statement follows news of the alleged death of a Uyghur poet and musician who was held in one of the camps. Associated Press reports that the death could not be independently confirmed. Large protests in Madrid took place on Sunday when center-right and far-right opposition parties called on people to protest against Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez. This is after the socialist leader announced that he would appoint a person to be part of talks to ease political tensions in Catalonia. The opposition wants Sanchez to call early elections and considers the appointment a betrayal and a surrender to pressure from Catalan separatists. And again, U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces say that they have, in fact, recaptured 41 positions held by Islamic State militants as they seek to clear the last enclave the militant group controls in eastern Syria. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
back and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Today is Monday, February 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Egypt's president is elected African Union chairman despite human rights record.
It is very difficult to find any country in Africa where you don't have some aspect of human rights violations. But some of those violations are also engineered from outside.
Shadrack Gutto is the professor emeritus of the University of South Africa. The new chair of the U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa will describe her legislative agenda for Africa. The local office of Nigeria's Election Commission went up in flames on Sunday. Zimbabwe teachers call off their strike action, while Kenya's clinical officers will join their striking colleagues today, Monday.
The other issue that we are talking about is the palpable discrepancies on salary and allowances, which we are saying that the government must implement and ensure that they're harmonizing for equal pay, equal work done.
George Gibori is the Secretary General of the Kenya Union of Clinical Officers, and we will tell you why some West African countries want to leave the CFA franc as a monetary unit. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi was elected Sunday as the new chairman of the African Union at the AU's 32nd summit in Addis Ababa, despite his government's poor human rights record. El-Sisi promised to improve peace and security on the continent, but Amnesty International says el-Sisi's chairmanship might undermine the African Union's human rights mechanisms. Shadrack Gutto, professor emeritus of the University of South Africa, says human rights abuses are not specific to one country in Africa. Besides, he says Egypt is one of the contributors to the sustainability of the African Union.
I think that it is very difficult to find any country in Africa where you don't have some aspect of human rights violations. But some of those violations are also engineered from outside. People who are arming rebels, people who are arming terrorists, people who are arming mercenaries, and they are not from Africa. So I think that the world has to take a broader view and accept that it is part of the problem in Africa. But to be specific to Egypt, I think it is very, very important to understand that Egypt is one of the countries that are considered to be the big five in terms of economic power, but also contributions that are made to the Africa Union to try and sustain it, even though the contributions are not enough.
The theme of this African Union summit now is focusing on refugees. Can you comment on that?
Definitely. What I've just said about the migration of people to seek refuge and asylum in Europe, indeed, there is a problem. But problems are there. And I think we need to deal with it. And if there's no peace and security in each of our countries, and if there's inequality in any of our countries, and there is inequality, even countries that are very rich, I think that we need to deal with the question of the social inequalities, where we have millionaires and even billionaires and trillionaires, but their wealth is kept in Washington, in London, in Switzerland, in France, and so forth. So we have stolen wealth of Africa lying outside of Africa. In fact, a study that was carried out by the AU, which was chaired by the former president of South Africa, Thabo Mbeki, had established that the outflow of resources from Africa is far greater than the so-called donor funds from outside. These are facts, but I believe the continent is really trying to move forward.
Shadre Guto is the Professor Emeritus of the University of South Africa. He was speaking with me from Pretoria, South Africa. The new chair of the U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa says she would like for Western sanctions on Zimbabwe to be lifted. But Karen Bass, a Democrat from California, says it is premature to lift the sanctions, especially when protesters are being beaten and jailed in Zimbabwe. She says her Africa legislative agenda will focus on supporting the building of Africa's infrastructure, democracy and governance, and humanitarian concerns.
I think that for the most part, U.S.-Africa relations have been a bit of a mystery over these last couple of years from the administration. However, in terms of Congress, Congress has been very active. If you want to know the top issues from my perspective this year, it's definitely going to be about infrastructure and how the U.S. and U.S. businesses can support the building of Africa's infrastructure in terms of roads, bridges, ports, airports, and then looking at democracy and governance, concern about the various crises that happen.
As you know, the African Union Summit is going on right now in Ethiopia. And one of the things they are talking about is the theme of the summit is refugees and how to find durable solutions to forced displacement in Africa. Your own comment, please, on the issue of African refugees or immigrants.
I think that a great deal of attention should be placed at addressing the root causes. And we know, of course, that a lot of the root cause is conflict. And so resolving those conflicts so populations will not feel that they need to flee. And then addressing climate change so that the climate-related crises that lead to mass exodus will also be alleviated.
In the context of the overall refugees or immigrant discussion, we have people here in the United States from a number of African countries who are immigrants and who have different statuses, immigration status. I think President Trump signed the last, what's something called temporary protected status. And yeah. So I think this coming March, there might be some problem unless something is done with the statuses of these people. Are you aware of that?
I am aware of it, and we are going to do everything we can. As a matter of fact, I'm having a major meeting about it tomorrow with a number of advocates. We want to do everything we can to prevent the administration from actually removing people. But I will tell you that the whole world has watched this administration administer very racist immigration policies, and so I'm very concerned about that. And I'm hoping that we can have some better view of this situation and will prevent the removal of thousands of Africans from the United States.
A number of very big African countries have had elections or are about to have elections. One of those countries is Nigeria, whose election is coming up on February 16. So any particular message from you as the Nigerians prepare to elect their next president?
Well, I'm just hoping that the election is peaceful, organized, transparent, and that the Nigerian people will be happy and accepting of the outcome.
On Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe had elections last year, and so there are still problems going on. But one of the concerns in Zimbabwe is the sanctions that were placed on Zimbabwe, former President Mugabe, even the current president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. Zimbabwe would like for these sanctions to be lifted. What's your view on that?
I would like for the sanctions to be lifted, too. However, I think what is going on now in Zimbabwe, it would be very hard to lift the sanctions when people who are involved in peaceful protests have been imprisoned, etc.
That was Congresswoman Karen Bass, the new chair of the U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa. She's speaking with me from Washington. Today's Monday, February 11th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Kenyan clinical officers have threatened to go on strike this week following the collapse of a collective bargaining agreement negotiations with the government. The Kenyan Union of Clinical Officers chairperson, Peterson Wachira, says that since 2017, the government has been unwilling to return to the negotiating table despite several interventions. Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
It has been a week of demonstrations and ghost law in some parts of Kenya as nurses paralyze health services in public hospitals. This week, Kenya's health sector is yet again being hit with another labor crisis as clinical officers have threatened to go on strike beginning this Saturday, February 16th, if the government does not meet their demands. Peterson Washira, the Kenya Union of Clinical Officers chairperson, issued an ultimatum citing a breach of agreement by the government. Washira faults the health ministry for not mediating the conflict involving county governments.
We want to bring to your attention that the Kenya Union of Clinical Officers entered into an agreement with the government, that is the 47 county government and the national government. We agreed that 2017 October on 5th that we have to go and have a recognition agreement, subsequently initiated the negotiation for CBA, which actually we initiated and finalized on the CBA, on the recognition agreement, where a majority of the county government have signed, the Minister of Health have not signed.
On the other hand, the Union Secretary General George Gibore said that the talks initiated in December 2017 collapsed in April last year and that the government has been unwilling to return to the negotiation table. Gibore says at least 90% of the issues at hand had been agreed upon by the time the government walked out in April 2018.
The other issue that we are talking about is the palpable discrepancies on salary and allowances, which we are saying that the government must implement and ensure that they're harmonizing for equal pay, equal work done. The ministry and the Council of Governors walked out of the CBA negotiation. We have exhausted all the provided mechanism to ensure that these issues are addressed.
The Ministry of Health, the Council of Governors and the Labour Ministry are the parties to the pay talks. However, the talks to have nurses who are currently on strike return to work have collapsed as the Nurses Union Secretary General Seth Panyako says that as from today, Monday, the nurses will be on a nationwide strike in solidarity with other nurses who have not been paid by specific county governments.
We have given strike notices to all for the county governments which are supposed to go on strike. So there is no conciliation in Nairobi. Conciliation must take place on the ground. The CBA is the solution to these recurrent expensive strikes that are actually costing the lives of Kenyans.
Clinical officers are demanding risk and call allowances to be raised from 3,000 shillings and 10,000 shillings to 30,000 and 70,000 shillings. They also want health workers' allowances increased from 20,000 shillings to 30,000 shillings, among other demands. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Zimbabwe teachers have called off strike action that began February 5th to demand pay increase. Raymond Majongwe, Secretary General of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, says many teachers faced intimidation from military officials and politicians during the strike. But he says the strike achieved many of its objectives, except the demand to increase the lowest salaries from $400 to $1,700. Majongwe says the teachers will strike again if the government does not follow through on its promises.
We had several issues up for discussion. The first one, we were demanding that teachers don't get persecuted for the strike action that they've undertaken. And we got the assurance that no one will be persecuted. The next point was we wanted to dialogue and negotiate as teachers alone as a sect without involvement of other parties. And we also got that. Now we are going to be negotiating as teachers without anybody else attending our negotiating processes and programs. Because we felt we were being compromised, because we were negotiating with many other workers who don't share the terms of reference, whose demands are far away from what we want, and whose dictates and everything else are detached and distanced from our own requests and requirements. So we have also gotten that one. And lastly, and most importantly, we also scored a major point where we actually realized the unit between the two major unions, the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, ZUTA, and the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. So as far as we are concerned, we have no apology to make. Definitely we will have solutions, we will have outcomes, even if we will ultimately not get the best and almost what we want, but we will surely salvage something.
Let me be clear. You wanted an increase in the salaries of the lowest paid teacher from 1,700 to 400. Did you get that accomplished?
That is what we are now going to discuss at the negotiating table. We know our country very well. We have always had problems. They failed to negotiate with doctors when they were on strike. And the most important point that you want to understand is we can't draw inferences and references between the teachers and the doctors' strike. Doctors are a very small group. We are talking of a group of not more than 10,000 people. And they could obviously then meet and negotiate and create a very powerful front. For teachers, we are talking of 130,000 people, some who are not even unionized. A proliferation of 8 unions in Zimbabwe. So we are bound to have this division. So as far as we are concerned, we have gotten something which is not the, but we want to believe we will solve something productive and positive from the newfound peace that we've established.
How successful was the participation of the teachers? I mean, did you get 100%, 50%, 75%, or was it poorly observed?
There were serious threats of intimidation and violence by ZANU-PF war veterans and youth. And because of that, there was so much fear in certain politically hot areas, like the Mashonaland and the East Mashonaland, the Western Mashonaland and Central. And teachers were scared. But the most important thing is the government considered the fact that teachers had stood. And the reason why they were then begging for teachers to return is because normalcy was no longer there. And the most important point is basically that even the state arms, the intelligence, the military, and many others were going around intimidating teachers. And ultimately, we then knew and we discovered that, continuing with the strike, we end up with many other victims. So it was only logical for us to call off the strike, go back to the negotiating table, and at least salvage something.
Raymond Majangwe is the Secretary General of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He was speaking with me from the capital, Harare. With less than a week before Nigeria's presidential election, a local government office of the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, in Plateau State, North Central Nigeria, has been completely destroyed by fire. The latest incident is the second in about a week after a similar fire in a state office in Abia, Southeast Nigeria, burned over 300 permanent voters' cars. Osaritin Imayiribo is the education and publicity in Plateau State.
There was a high inferno. The ballot box is outside. They are stacked outside to be taken in today. Got burnt, all the materials in the place. There were generators that have been serviced that they were to deploy to the rack centers or got burnt. And other materials, they are all non-sensitive materials. I'd like to reemphasize that there were no card readers. Card readers are still being configured here at the state office.
Osiritin Imayiribo is the head of voter education and publicity in Plateau State for the Nigerian Independent Electoral Commission. There is growing fervor behind the movement for West African countries to leave behind the franc CFA as a monetary unit because of its tie to former colonial power France. A professor of economics at the University of Lomé in Togo, Kako Nubupo, is one an outspoken critic of the CFA, and he thinks countries in the region will be better off with a new currency.
For majority of growing cases that have massive contraction, and some of these cases were congenital abnormalities like this in Dantele. And we also have some of these cases that came in, we did a deep plastic and we did contractual release, and some we had a good skin graft.
Is this something new for the children have not been able to access before?
This is something that is actually not 100% new, because we have a lot of other surgical missions that come. But some of them come once a year, some of them come twice a year. But for our MSF project, this is the first time we have done these cases for the pediatric surgery.
So it's the first time you've done it for children?
Yes, it is the first time we have done it for children.
These children are mostly burn victims, you said. Is it a household accident?
Yes, most of them are household accident, like hot water burn, fire burn. We have a little boy that has massive, extensive face burn, and it was due to fire in a hot water, boiling water.
What does this mean for these kids? That they'll be able to go back to school? That they'll be able to live more normal lives?
Yes, exactly. After this plastic surgery, most of them, all of them that were done, they will live a normal life. They will go back to school, and then they will be happy among their friends. Friends won't shout at them because they have some problem.
What kind of care do the children require after leaving the hospital? Does that pose a challenge?
After the surgery, like for now, we have a physiotherapy that is going on. So for those patients, those children that haven't been using that part of the body since they got burned, most of them will need some physiotherapy. So now they are undergoing it. And the rest of them, they are okay. They are home, going to school. They are living their normal life.
Right. That was Kako Nupupu, a professor of economics at the University of Lomé in Togo. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Paris. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports from North Africa, where Egyptian club Ismaili SC have been reinstated to this year's African Champions League after a successful appeal against their expulsion. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, 3 weeks ago disqualified Ismaili after crowd trouble brought an early end to the Egyptian club's home game with Tunisia's Club Africain. Cameroonian referee Niet Allium called off the game, which took place in Ismailia on the 18th of January in the dying stage after a lengthy stoppage as Ismaili's angry fans kept hurling bottles onto the pitch with their sides trailing 2-1. And now to the CAF Champions League. Several matches have been lined up to be played on Tuesday. In one of the games, Simba will face Al Ahly, while Horoya will welcome FC Platinum. TP Mazembe of Congo will travel to Club African, while ASEC Mimosas will host South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns. In other group matches, it will be Wydad Casablanca who will welcome Lobi Stars of Nigeria, while JS Saoura will be hosting AS Vita V Club. Two sports journalists, Deji Ogembo and Alfred Saiki, preview the standings in the group and what to expect in Tuesday's CAF Champions League matches.
The likes of Wydad Casablanca, they understand the ethics or the theatrics of playing on the continent. You could see videos of them even trying to harass the referee. They knew these things are psychological, and I think that's where Lobi Stars are lacking too. So the game in Morocco will be a daunting task for them.
For the Orlando Pirates and Esperance of Tunis, I think they are perennial contenders right now in the CAF Champions League, so they're used to the terrain. So we expect both of them to come out from this group. Anything could happen, and if anything happens, guys will be Uriah coming out.
And now to the CAF Under 20 African competition holding in Niger, where the semi finalists in the competition have emerged. In the first semi final, it will be Flying Eagles of Nigeria who will meet the Junior Eagles of Mali in an all West African semi final on Wednesday. The second semi final will be between Senegal and South Africa. All four semi-finalists have earned a ticket to represent the continent during the FIFA Under 20 World Cup finals in Poland. Some sports fans believe Africa will put up a brilliant performance during the Under 20 World Cup, going by the teams that will represent the continent.
I must say I'm impressed with what South Africa is doing. Technically, they are sound. When it comes to technicalities, they are one of the best in Africa. Senegal, powerhouse, we know how they play. So I think it's good for Africa.
I've been really impressed with the Senegalese. I mean, a lot of that has been cast into whether these guys are the right age, but bottom line is that they've instilled some right ethics into them, and they've really surprised all and sundry, qualified with a game to spare. So they are one team to watch out for, but the South Africans are really young. I love their vibrancy, their approach to the game.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, February 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a productive week.
Hello, peepsters. Welcome to the weekend. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Boy, do I have a show for you. 55 minutes of cool, commercial-free, pan-African music. Hear your favorite current Afro beats. Discover new music from Ghana and meet Blinky Bill from Nairobi. He's just released a new album.
Even if you know a lot of things, there's no guarantee that you're gonna see it tomorrow.
Revel in earthy African classics from Mali, Cape Verde, DRC, and South Africa. So that, so that. Elvis, and more this Sunday at 15:05 and 20:05 UTC. Just tune in to your local FM station and meet me there. Music Time in Africa.